Brother, do you know 17 Keys from Crossing Broad?
I do not know him, no.
Yeah, he's just some...
Well, I know who he is.
17 Keys. I don't even know who that is. Anyway.
It's always soccer in Philadelphia on a Monday afternoon, and if the season ended today, the Philadelphia Union would be Eastern Conference champions because they are right where they should be, at the top of the table after one game with a +3 goal differential. I hope you all found that one as exciting as I did. I wasn't totally feeling the first 15 minutes, but there was never a doubt in my mind they would find a way. And so here we are talking about the Philadelphia Union, one win in one game so far to start off the season on a positive note. We're going to break down the game, talk about the goals. We'll talk about penalty kicks and handballs and everything else with Peter Andrews from the Philly Soccer Page, who joins the program once again. What's good, man? It's good to have you back.
Kevin, it's always good to come on. Thanks for having me. I feel like I usually come on at the start of the year and I point out that, you know, 3 years ago, I came on after the LAFC game about 2 days before the pandemic put the season to an end. And so I'm hoping for better luck this time.
That's right. Yeah, let's hope it does not go straight to shit here after this episode and they don't come out and lose the next two or three or whatever. But, I mean, what a way to start, man. They couldn't sniff the ball for like the first 10 or 15 minutes. I'm sort of thinking to myself, all right, let's make an adjustment here. You know, I was like an Eagles fan talking very generically about Jonathan Gannon. I hope they make an adjustment here, you know, in the 15, 20 minutes, you know, around that point of the game. And they did. And, you know, really it was very simple. They just stepped the center backs up and they played them a lot tighter to Zellerion and to Darlington Nagbe. And they kind of tried to squeeze the space a little bit more and just make that line a little bit tighter and play a little higher up the field. And that made all the difference. And, you know, they got an iffy penalty at the end of the half, and then whatever Jim Curtin said to him at halftime worked because they looked much more like the team that we've watched for the last couple of years, just putting crunching tackles in, dispossessing opponents and getting out on the counter and scoring a couple goals from the run of play in the process. So, you know, I think that's just what changed the game, that defensive adjustment for them, and then just sort of up in the tempo for them in the second half. You were down there at the game. Your macro level takeaway from the win.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with the defensive part of it, like, because I had the same thought as you in the first 15 minutes. Like, this is – you don't usually see a team that's just kind of, like, keeping the Union from even touching the ball. They weren't really generating a ton of serious chances with it, but Jim did say after the game, you know, yeah, we made some defensive adjustments. And I had a chance to talk to Jacob Glesnes a little bit in locker room. And he said, he was very honest about it. He was like, yeah, you know, it felt a little weird to be chasing these guys basically into the midfield, but it worked out what we needed to do to kind of disrupt what they were trying to do. I think so few teams like really try to play against the Union because they just know that it's because the Union are so good that they know nothing's going to come of it. And so I think Columbus, they clearly want to try to play. I think it was better for the Union that they got Columbus in the first game, right, where they're still trying to figure it out. They totally broke in the second half. Didn't look anything like the team in the first half. I think by the end of the year, they've got some quality. They could be a contender. I mean, the macro level thing is like, this is a team that started 11 guys who were on the best team in Union history last year.
I know.
And so, you know, they have such incredible continuity. I think if you had said in November, whenever MLS Cup was, like, every single one of these starters is going to be back, you would have been surprised. You'd be really optimistic about this season. And it looked like they picked up right where they left off.
It's crazy, man. I don't think people made enough of – I don't think that was talked about enough in the offseason. You know? I mean, yeah. they're running it back with the best team in franchise history, a team that – technically did not even lose MLS Cup. They lost it on penalties. You know, they played to a 3-3 draw. I mean, the fact that Wagner is still around, Jose Martinez is still around, I don't know what it says about those guys and their value overseas, but I was stunned that they were able to come back with the full team, you know, and then depth to boot, you know.
And they're running it back with guys who aren't, like, it would be one thing if it felt like they were cresting kind of an age curve.
Yeah.
But everyone is basically in their prime. I mean, with the exception of Bedoya, who's, yes, you know, in his 30s, like everyone else is between, what, 26 and 29?
Yeah, but Bedoya, by the way, who we've been wondering for the last 3 years when his legs are going to finally run out on him. I mean, he still looks good. So, I mean, I'll admit that I was off on that one. I thought he would not be anywhere close to the player that he is at age 35. But yeah, it was interesting, like those couple sequences watching like Glessis and Elliott be like 20 yards inside the Columbus half, like chasing guys who are much smaller than them into the midfield. But it worked, you know, because they just pushed them backwards and they moved them. They didn't give them that time and space on the ball. And then you had guys rotating out to cover, you know. I mean, you had your shuttlers back there, you had your fullbacks back there. So it wasn't pushing them up and making them chase in lieu of, you know, losing bodies on the back line, right? It was just they wanted to get up on their back and make it so they couldn't turn. And, yeah, it's funny to me because we were talking. I think you're like me and you're kind of pragmatic when it comes to the penalties that were called against Columbus. But look, the Union scored 4 goals, right? So even if you took away both of the penalties, if we say both of the penalties were bullshit, they still would have won 2-1. Right. I mean, so it doesn't change the narrative or like the overarching takeaway for me, because they still would have beat them even without those penalties. So I'm glad that was not the thing that we're talking about today. We can still talk about it from the standpoint of I don't know. I mean, you know me.
Let's just get into that first one. I mean, he's, you know, you're essentially just whapping the ball as hard as you can. It hits the guy's hand a foot away from you.
Yeah.
And that's a penalty. I mean, I guess it technically is a penalty, but I mean,
there's no way that guy can get out of the way, which is I think what my thing is. It was Mohamed Farsi. And like,
I thought Farsi had a really good first half going down the, you know, they really pinned Wagner back in that first half.
Yeah.
A lot of that was Farsi working with Cucho Hernandez. And then, yeah, he gets, you know, what's he supposed to do about it? And I think the counterpoint is like, well, you know, tough luck. Maybe there's some of that. I don't know. It's soft to me. And it's the kind of thing where sometimes it feels like, and I'm not saying this is what the Union were doing, but a lot of the times it feels like once the ball gets in the box, everyone is just screaming for a penalty rather than trying to score a goal. And I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
just trying to whap the ball and hope it hits off someone's arm. That's not really what this thing's about, you know?
No. And like the practical side of me will say that, look, if you got the opponent pinned back and you're in their box and you're just ripping shots left and right, then yeah, you put yourself in a position where you're probably going to benefit from that more than anything. So I think I you know, even if the game ended like 2-1 or something and the Union scored those 2 bullshit penalties or whatever, I'd say, well, you know, they had the crew under pressure and they were just, you know, it was like a firing squad in there for a little bit and they were just, you know, unleashing shots. And so you give them credit for putting the other team in a position where those kinds of mistakes can happen. But I mean, Farsi is like less than 2 feet away from the ball. He can't get away from that. And if you watch it back, you know, it's kind of like a recycled set piece and the ball falls in the box and they square it back. And he's just turning and reacting to a cutback pass. You know, his arm is naturally going to be like up a little bit as he's turning. I don't know about you, but I've never seen anybody turn and pivot with their hands at their side, right? Because you're not, because we're not penguins, right? You know, penguins walk around with their, do they have arms or fins or what are we calling them?
There's your title for the episode.
It's like these guys, because I hear people say like, well, all you gotta do is keep your hands at your side, but you're not like, you know, again, you're playing soccer. You're not walking around Antarctica like a penguin in the box trying to keep
your
hands.
If you're doing it at top speed, how are you keeping your balance if you're also gluing your arms to your?
Yeah, you don't. You use your arms for like just turning leverage and balance and stuff like that. And so I just don't think that like his arm was in any kind of unnatural position. I would say the second one I thought actually probably made more sense, just even though the ball was hit just as hard. Daganek was a little bit further away and that probably changed it was easier to see that changed the trajectory of the ball. So, I mean,
why did it take so long? I mean, this is what I keep coming back. Like I'm a little more annoyed about the second one only because VAR is so frustrating to me. Mm-hmm. The inconsistency with which it's applied, the kind of, the way, it takes way too long to make these decisions. I mean, you know, that was a 5-minute delay in the game. And I think they got the right call in the end, but, I mean, for one, I don't know how it's clear and obvious when it takes that long to figure it out. And if it's a process error, that's something MLS has got to figure out because to me, those VAR reviews totally destroy the flow of games. Like, it's one thing, you know, I think we're all used to football where you're used to, like, okay, we got it. We'll just go to commercial break for a catch or whatever. That's bad enough. But soccer does not have these kinds of breaks in it, you know?
No.
You basically, like, that was the end of the game. Like, obviously, you're up 3-1 in the 60-whatever minute. Like, that is kind of the end of the game anyway. But it just totally broke the flow. The long delay, the long run-up, Gosdag buries the penalty, and then that's basically it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, everybody who's listened to this show in the past knows that my philosophy on penalties is just that I don't like things ever having to come down to penalties. I don't like penalty kicks on handballs. I don't like guys diving in the box. I don't like 1-0 games being decided by questionable penalty kicks. I don't like guys blowing up their individual stats by scoring 7 penalties in 1 year. I don't like MLS Cup being decided on penalty kicks, you know, but that's why I go back to what I said earlier about I'm glad they scored those 2 goals from the run of play because it removed that from the equation. Like, I know everybody's talking about the Joaquin Torres, you know, pirouette, the little Zidane move, and then the left-footed pass, which is one of the best passes I've seen this team play in the last couple of years. But I thought the other goal that they scored, the second goal, which ended up being the game winner, I broke that down on video on my Twitter account, and I just thought that was the better, like, team goal because it was prototypical Union, you know, and it was just a good read by Leon Flock. I give him credit more than anybody for that goal. Just a good initial press. Then the secondary press comes from Jose Martinez. Bang, bang, you spring the 4v3 going the other way. And that was just classic. That's what they were doing when Brendan was here, you know, because then 2021 came around. They had Jamiro playing in that role. And then last year, everybody kept saying high press, high press, high press. They hadn't been a high pressing team for a while, but that was the perfect example of it right there. So they not only are they still good at it, but they can still do it when they read those cues.
Well, it's the combination of the high press plus the midfield turnover, which is like so many Union goals start with the kind of middle third turnover, at least middle third to kind of opposition half turnover. You know, what I thought Columbus was doing in the first part of the game was because they're compressing the space and they're keeping the space in the Union half. It was tough for the Union to get those kinds of turnovers that they use to start their attack. But when the Union are able to generate that turnover where, like, Martinez, he wins the ball and he's able to immediately play the guys forward, you get the odd man rush. It's a really quality pass from Jose, who I thought had a typically really good Jose game, except for the part where at one point he yelled at a referee for, like, no reason.
That just comes with the territory.
You kind of expect that. It's a great ball by Gosdag to find Bedoya, and it's a good ball from Bedoya. And then when you look at that finish from Carranza, I mean, it is such a quality, him realizing that he's only got one way to get the ball past the keeper and him doing that. We can talk more about the other goal in a second, but I was curious what you thought. It really jumped out to me in the press conference after the game that Curtin said when asked about Carranza, like, oh, teams are asking about him with Ernst, and we hope he's going to have a great year. We hope it's a full season here. I mean, there have not been any concrete rumors about Carranza, but, like, that just jumped out to me as, like, they're really thinking he could be gone in the summer.
Well, shit, I guess I never have really considered that, you know? I mean, I just you know, because we talk about the same guys over and over. Are they going to lose Wagner? Are they going to lose Martinez? Is, you know, Glestis going to go back at some point? I guess I never thought of that. You know, that worries me a little bit more.
Because when you think about who this, in terms of saleable assets, I mean, Julian Carranza is, what, 22, 23? Yeah, a guy with great pedigree out of the South American League. Like, they're going to be a South American League. There are going to be teams down there that are interested. There might be teams abroad who say, like, when he's that young, he's scoring goals, he's got the work rate, he's got the finishing. Like, he's one who you could see a team in Europe saying, oh, like, this guy's worth a
$5 million. That's true. Yeah, that's true. And I don't, you know, it worries me a little bit too, because, I mean, Corey Burke's not there anymore. I mean, your next striker off the bench is, you know, I don't know. I guess they played Torres there, because did they sub him in for Ua in the second half? I guess. Yeah, so. And he's not really a striker, but yeah, that's curious. I mean, it's interesting that Jim would come out and say that, especially after the first game. But yeah, I mean, he keeps scoring goals, then yeah, he's going to have interest overseas for sure. I It was interesting because in the first half, I thought, I'm like, hey, this is a Mikel Uwara game because they've got him pinned back so deep and Columbus is pushing those wing backs up. And, you know, they're only playing three at the back. I'm like, man, if you can drive a few diagonals into the corner there, you pull some Sebastian Latou 2010 kind of stuff and let him run. Yeah, and they ended up not really having to do that because they made the defensive adjustment just to push their whole lineup instead. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good game all around. I love how Gajdog, too, gets the second two secondary assists and two penalties.
Secondary assists and two penalties. talk about a really legit lead in the golden goal race.
No, he's like one of those guys that you just have to, like play him in – fantasy or something, because you're not sure how, but he ends up with the points anyway. But I mean, yeah, I mean, the one was a great pass, you know, for him to hold on to that and the game winning goal, for him to hold and then play at the right time. I mean, there's a lot of skill with that, sure, and scoring penalties is skill too. It just makes me laugh because it's like, you know, I'm looking at DraftKings before the game and I'm like, I don't know what kind of values here anymore, because people like the Union now. Like, I can't find the good, I can't find the like little secret, like plus odds things I used to play all the time, but there's still value in that. You know, he's a, like the Gajdog to score a goal or assist at like -110 or 105 or whatever it is. That this year may be like the Jalen Hurts anytime touchdown, you know, cause he's going to take the penalties and he's going to be in and around it. And, yeah, like Hurts is going to get the double cheek push or whatever from the 1 yard line, so it's there, you know. But it was crazy, man. I think just how much they flipped a switch and were able to turn it on and just look like a completely different team. And I think Jim, he may have even said after the game, you know, I didn't really have to give them instructions.
Yeah, know? He sort of said in the presser, he was like, I let them figure it out. I mean, this is the advantage. I asked him about kind of what the advantage of continuity is, you know, having the same group of guys this year and last year. And he said, you know, what he said was interesting was everyone knows each other's strengths, but they also know each other's weaknesses. And they, once you have that understanding, you can solve problems in a simpler way, because you figure out how to get guys in the right spaces and out of the wrong ones. And it didn't seem like there was some halftime, you know, we got to go do this, you know, let's wake up. This was much more of a, you guys know what to do. Like, let's go do it. And they're just, they're so devastating on the counterattack that it helped. I think that they got the PK right before halftime, because that, at least you go in at 1-1, you're in better shape.
Yeah. Isn't that so applicable though to like anything really? I mean, cause I'm a manager now at the company. So I have a couple guys who are like, you know, my guys or whatever, you know, like Pagan and, you know, Anthony Sanfilippo is one of our freelancers and whatever. I don't give anybody like any instructions, because we've been working together for so long now that we just like, I know what they do and what they're capable of and how they.
But like, that's different from like, think about Wilfred Nancy on the other touchline, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's got 11 guys. Some of those guys are brand new. He gave a couple guys MLS debuts. He's working with a new group. And it seemed pretty clear that once the Union made their adjustment, there wasn't a forthcoming adjustment being made, whereas the Union are just, they can solve a lot of problems that are thrown at them.
Yeah, they can. And with minimal instruction too. And that's just like how anybody operates when you have that fluidity and continuity. And I think that's such an underrated thing, you know, going into the season. You know, the thing about the Torres too, and that pass, I was trying to think the last time they had anybody. I guess I would preface it by saying this, like Elsino is the best on ball, like skill player that they've ever had. Right. But Elsino is not some like number 10, like who was going to unlock a defense, but he was a winger. He's always been a wide player. Right. You know, when I think back to like Christian Maidana, he always used to like, he had 15 assists that one season. He always used to pull wide, used to pull into the corner. Brendan Aaronson was a pressing number 10. Gajdog is kind of a late box arriver, penalty kick guy. They haven't really had like a slicing and dicing South American.
Barnetta a little bit.
Barnetta. I was thinking Dochkal maybe a little bit, but they've never really had a Mauro. They're like a Zelarayan. They've never really.
He really does remind me of Roger Torres more than
Roger Torres.
I mean, in terms of like being a. He's just like a little guy who has that ability to control the ball and pick his, you know, I remember that first season, there were some games where like Torres would come on for 20 minutes and he'd pick out a pass that, you know, you couldn't see anyone else on the team making.
Yeah. But even then, they were a lot of he hit a lot of like loopy kind of stuff with his left foot. I mean, he would put these pinpoint passes on people, but I like just to play like an on the ground through ball from like the middle of the field. I just really don't remember that ever being a big part of any Union team ever. I mean, I guess it's like the hardest thing to do on the field anyway, but they've never really,
he's a guy. Really, what's amazing is that he's a guy who, if the season goes right, he's going to play like the 13th most minutes in the squad or something like that, which is crazy. I mean, the depth that they have with him now is, and the ability to change games off the bench, which is the one thing that I think a lot of us agreed was sort of lacking last season. I mean, they really have that because you can go offensive with him. You can put McGlynn in, you can, or you can kind of tweak the defense with Andres Correa. You've got Quinn Sullivan who got some minutes. You've got like even a guy like Jesus Bueno who Curtin seemed happy with his preseason.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was just such a sensational to have it be his first touch, right? Basically his first touch is spin move, and assist like no one's ever seen to put the capper on the goal.
Yeah.
It's a real rise to the moment kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I don't even know what we when they taught that to us in like second grade. What did they call it? Like a beck? It's not the Beckenbauer, is it? Like Zidane does that little 2 foot turn all the time. For some reason, I just cannot remember the like the actual.
I just call it a spin. I just call it a spin move. You know, you're pressing circle on the FIFA controller. Or whatever.
There's an entire like 20-minute YouTube clip that I think I watched 100 times where it's just set. It's set to like some European like EDM song, and it's just Zinedine Zidane doing that turn like over and over again for Juventus and Real Madrid and everybody. But it was just, I think it just gives them the ability to do so much more when you have those kinds of guys, you know, coming off the bench and just being able to give you a bit of like directness and on ball skill and whatnot. I'm interested to see how they evolve that way schematically. And if they can throw like a plan B or a formational or tactical plan C at somebody at the same time too. It just feels like it's funny, man. Cause like I said, on the last podcast they did, they could stay in the diamond for the entire year and probably hammer a bunch of teams 4-1, but they have, because of the continuity now, they have the luxury of switching out and doing something different if they have to. So they're going to have a ton of games. I'm interested to see where they go with it. So Jim mentioned after the game, talked about the anonymous quote from the MLS executive who was basically who picked the Union to win it all and then proceeded to shit all over the Union. I threw the story on Crossing Broad because I was like, oh, maybe, you know, the average Philly fan will, you know, appreciate this. But what did you make of the quote and then him talking about it after the game?
Well, it's so fun. I mean, I thought it was funny on a couple different levels, one of which is the quote is obviously stupid. I mean, there are definitely Union teams of the Curtin era who were like that, who I think kicked more than they had any real quality. But in recent years, I don't think that's remotely true. And I think especially the 2022 Union was pound for pound the best team in the league, and it wasn't because they were kicking the crap out of people. They scored 75 goals or whatever.
They're really good, man. They have like individual.
They were really good, and just because they did it in this, you know, they did it in this kind of defense to offense kind of way. I mean, it was a dumb thing to say. It is so funny to me to like, you know, there's kind of there's the joke about, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs after winning the Super Bowl going, no one believed in us. It's like, well, you're the Kansas City Chiefs and you have Patrick Mahomes. Like a lot of people believed in you.
It's like when UGA came out after beating TCU like 65-7, and they said, people said we were going 7-5 this year.
Yeah,
I mean, they couldn't even Turkmenistan could not even brainwash. Turkmenistan state television could not brainwash people the way that they, that Kirby Smart had them thinking, you know?
I mean, it's just funny because the Union, I would say almost every intelligent part of the football soccer media that I looked at was saying like, look, the Union are heavy favorites. They got continuity. They're really good. They got the best coach. They won like every award at the end of last season. Like, and they find a way to basically make this the story. It's like, oh, one guy doesn't believe in us. Like, we're going to like call this out. And I think to Jim's credit, he wasn't he you know, I think he played it off the right way. I think the anonymous quotes are for cowards is a good Philly way of responding to that. And he didn't make too much of it. Like, he wasn't saying like, oh, like, you know, these people are idiots, blah, blah, blah. I was just saying like, I told the guys, like, we need to keep in mind that we haven't won anything yet. And I think that's the right approach. I mean,
I think it's funny because, that's probably on the levels of on the like motivational scale. I think disrespect is at the very bottom. Like, it's such a rudimentary way to get yourself amped up about something. And, you know, like, oh, you disrespected me, or you don't believe in me, I'm going to prove you wrong, you know, because that's external motivation, right? But do you think that, like, guys who reached the pinnacle, like, do you think Tom Brady was ever motivated by, like, what people were saying about him? No. And so I think the union are good now, right? Like, I mean, you get that one weird quote, but I think for the most part, people think they're a damn good team.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know if you're picking, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I don't know if they're picking at low hanging fruit by going to that or caring about that. I don't know if they do. But I mean, to me, this is a team that, like, seems like they wouldn't even have to go there because they just seem like they're self-motivators who, and they're winners. There's no divas on this team, and they seem like they would be, you know, just fine kind of generating their own, you know, motivation.
No, I mean, I think they are. I don't think that they would have come out and played any differently if that quote hadn't come out. And I don't think that, like, pro athletes need that kind of thing, but I think pro athletes are wired very differently from you and me. And I do think, I mean, for me at least, like, I don't think of myself as a pro athlete. I won't make any assumptions about what's going on in Kincaid's head. But I do think there is something about, like, between Jim and Bedoya. Like, I think Bedoya, he does, you know, he's they're both guys who kind of wear their heart on their sleeve and who are, like, you know, got a little bit of that chippy, like, you know, fuck you kind of thing.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if there is a part of that that is like, yeah, you know, we're gonna show them or whatever. There was definitely some of that last year, like when they beat NYC in the final. There was definitely a lot of like, well, they beat us last year, and like, we never forgot it, and we never forgot the way that they danced around and stuff. So,
yeah, I just don't see them going to the. I don't see them going to the UGA and Kansas City Chiefs.
No, like, I don't think so.
Level of like North Korea brainwashing, where it's like nobody believed in us. You know, it's like, okay, so one anonymous executive takes a shot at you, even though he picks you to win the whole thing.
Right. At a certain point, once you are setting club records every season and winning the Supporters Shield, the Eastern Conference Championship, like, it's just absurd to say, well, you know, no one believes in us. Like,
you were the at the game, so I guess you didn't watch the Apple TV broadcast of the Union game, but you said you watched Apple TV for a couple of the other games or broadcasts. What games you watch, and what'd you make of it?
I watched like the first half of the Nashville game before I went down to the park, and then I watched bits and bobs of a Vancouver game, and the yesterday the Sounders kicked the crap out of Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really watch any of the studio show parts of it, so I'd be curious what you thought about that and like the round show and stuff. I was really happy with the quality of the video was really good.
Looked great, yeah.
The quality of the broadcast, like, I thought originally, oh, these graphics are like a little simple, but actually it really works. Like, that's kind of in the modern era where everyone has good TVs, like, you don't need to get crazy with it.
Yeah, sometimes less is more, you know.
And the production quality was really high, like in terms of picking good replays, and most of the, you know, the broadcasters I heard seemed like they were doing a good job. I mean, my problem with my big picture problem with the Apple TV deal is just kind of like, what is taking things off of local TV and putting it behind a paywall do in the long term? And I don't think that we won when every game was free answered. And you know, we're kind of in a bubble where everyone I see on Twitter is like MLS sickos. But from like a technical perspective, I was really happy with week one.
Yeah, so you and I are on the same page with this, because I'm sure there's some people who are probably like laughing right now and be like, well, Kincaid was ripping the Apple thing from the beginning and hates Apple more than anything. But I was never worried about the quality of the broadcast or how they would do presenting this to us. I mean, my concern was always about like, was my dad texting me and saying, where the fuck is the Uni game? Right. I mean, that's the thing that I was worried about. Right. I think for MLS diehards, to be able to have that all in-house, be able to watch the replays very easily, to have the roundtable show, I guess it was Nigel Rio Coker, Andrew Wiebe, Taylor Twellman, I think, and oh my God, what's the host's name? Was it Jillian Sekovitz? Yeah. I may have the wrong person there, but I mean, that was good. I mean, it was just a quick, like, hey, here's all the games, here's the goals, here's whatever. I didn't really get to dive into too much else because I was, you know, I had to watch the Sixers game and I had to do all this other stuff. And but no, I mean, I thought it was good from a production standpoint. They're just, the problem is, one of the problems is they're doing the same damn thing that everybody does, and they have to cut away from the action. They got to show a close up of the guy's face. And then you're like kind of late to arrive, and there's a shot on goal. And it's like, I just wish that they would never, like, just never cut away from the game while the ball's in play. You know, if somebody's down injured or something, or if there's a penalty kick and you got to cut out of it, that's fine. But like, I think that, you know, sometimes less is more with broadcast and soccer, and you just got to kind of, you know, stay away from those kinds of habits, you know, that you would have in basketball or baseball or whatever.
And like, I heard there were commercials during the whip around show and stuff, which seems to very much defeat the point. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of room for experimentation. Like, I would love to see a kind of all 22 kind of camera that gets sort of the view that, like, you know, I've gotten used to up in the press box, you kind of see the game from this higher up angle. Mm-hmm. I think there are some real nerds who would love to have that kind of view. And I don't know how much flexibility Apple has to like add those sorts of things, but I don't know, from a feature perspective, you know, it's a they spent a ton of money on it. So
it's, yeah. And it's like, listen, I'm an MLS diehard. You're an MLS diehard. It's perfect for MLS diehards. I wasn't worried about MLS diehards. I was worried about casuals. So I think that's where I draw the line of demarcation. One last thought on that. Danny Higginbottom was the color guy for this game, and Steve Cangelosi was the play-by-play guy. So Cangelosi's been the Red Bulls announcer for forever. Danny, the last 2 years, have been doing union stuff. So now they're both neutrals calling the game for everyone. So I thought Danny did a really, really good job of making him presenting himself as a neutral, because he could have, not that I'm not saying that he was a homer last year or the year before, but he was a union guy, right? And so it would have been easy for him to show favorability towards the union in that broadcast, and it would have been easy for Cangelosi to, you know, to show Columbus favorability since he was the Red Bulls guy. But I thought they both did a really good job of making a neutral for a neutral crowd. And it's gonna be kind of weird for these announcers to kind of you know, kind of get a feel for that, you know, right off the bat. But I thought that they did a solid job with it in the first game. I did want to mention too, because I didn't mention this because I didn't do another podcast, but the broadcast rights, the radio rights, obviously went to 97.5, the Fanatic, this year. So the radio broadcast is going to be Dave, and I guess Shannon's going to be on there with them. Sebastian's going to be involved. Some other people, Adam Collins, going to be involved. You know, obviously from the gambler's standpoint, like, we don't have the rights anymore. You know, cause the union wanted to go to a bigger platform, and that's fine. I mean, I don't blame them. You know, it's great that they have the Fanatic involved, but, you know, I would just like to shout out Sean and John Jansen and Joe Tansy and everybody over there for, you know, really being at the forefront and giving the union a platform to start on with radio. And, you know, it was really fun doing that post game show, and I appreciate everybody, you know, listening to the post game show when we did it. And I don't think the Fanatic announced if they're doing anything with that or not. You know, maybe at some point they just have a thing where like their own talent comes on after the broadcast and says, "Oh, we'll do 15 minutes on the game and then get back to the Eagles or some shit," right? You know, but no, I just want to take a minute to say thanks to everybody for listening to the post game show on the Gambler, and we'll see what happens with the Fanatic deal here. Do you have any thoughts? I need to look for a tweet here actually real quick. Do you have any thoughts on the Fanatic thing?
No, I mean, I think from a distribution perspective, like the Fanatic, I was telling Joe Tansy in the press box, I was like, you know, I love the Gambler. I was trying to get your feet in Delaware one time, and it sounded like it was coming from Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. There's a big advantage from that perspective. But, no, you guys did a good job over on the Gambler, and they're still going to be doing some coverage. I know that, I think Fridays at 5, maybe, is Tansy doing an hour on
yeah, there? I think they're still – yeah, we did the Friday thing last week, and so the Gambler's still going to do plenty of union coverage. They're just not going to have the games on there. So and to be honest, too, I wasn't sure. I had texted Sean a couple weeks ago. I was like, hey, I don't know if I can do the post-game show this year just because I have 2 little kids. Like, they're 1.5 and 3.5 now. It's just like a grind with all the other Crossing Broad shit I have to do. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to. I was only doing every other game last week. So even if it went to the Fanatic and they wanted to bring over the whole crew or whatever, I don't know if I would have done it anyway. And I don't know if I could do it. It might be a conflict of interest to take a paycheck from Beasley, because I write about the radio on Crossing Broad anyway, so I don't think I could take a paycheck from them and then write like fairly about it. But that's neither here nor there. Okay, the tweet I was looking for is because Jeffrey Mitchell is asking for a favor here. He says, hey, can you please let your listeners know that this spring at an SOB tailgate, I'll be shaving my head again for St. Baldrick's. In the past 9 shaves, we've raised over $40,000 to fund the research to find a cure for childhood cancer. So go to Jeffrey Mitchell's Twitter, @FatherOfBen. You should know him by now. If you don't, I'm not sure how he's at every game. And go to his Twitter, and he's doing the fundraiser again for St. Baldrick's. So shout out.
Yeah, I'd pay to see that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's all I have. There's some questions.
Let me ask you one question, just because you mentioned the grind. The MLS season can be a grind for the players, and we've got a lot made in kind of the week leading up to the game about, so the Union have one more MLS game, and then they're doing CCL, and then they're also going to be in the U.S. Open Cup. They're going to be in the Leagues Cup. They got all this stuff going on. How do you feel about the volume of games you're going to play this season? Like, are you looking forward to these Tuesday games against Alianza in a week and a half? Like, where's your head at on that?
I think I'm okay with it. I'm just out on the Leagues Cup bullshit. I gotta be honest, man. I hate to be crass, but this is a very honest podcast. We don't pull punches here. I fucking hate the Leagues Cup. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit about it. Why do I care about League MX? You know, I know that they want to push that from a business standpoint because they think that by, you know, combining, you know, the forces of Mexico and Canada and all of North America or whatever, that it makes for a better, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, just gives you more
synergy there.
Yeah, synergy gives more firepower across the board, and there's some intrigue there. But I think the Union to have a successful season, I think they need to win a trophy. I don't like the fact that they could be rolling in the league or whatever in the Open Cup. And now you got like four or five different competitions, and you got to figure out what you're trying to prioritize. This is hard enough. It was going to be hard enough with the Champions League and with the Open Cup and with the Supporter Shield and with MLS Cup at the same time. So now you're throwing this fugazi thing in there too. And it's just like, I don't know. I mean, you know me, I'll take as much soccer as I can get. I just don't think I don't know how that benefits the teams or the players, you know? It's kind of like in the NBA where they throw these tons of these back-to-backs there. And, you know, these guys are sitting for load management and shit like that. I'm like, is this good? This is good for the owners and it's good for the arenas to make this money, but that's it. It's not good for the players. It's not good for the fans. It's not good for the coaches, you know?
Well, and I think, that has certainly been my take on it, is that the League's Cup in particular is just something without audience. There's some discussion on PSP about, you know, thinking about it from the perspective of kind of Mexican and Hispanic fans who are excited about seeing their teams play. And maybe, so on the one hand, it's like you get to see their teams play and you're also getting some, maybe some crossovers, like someone who wouldn't go to a Union game, they're going to a League's Cup game and then they get into the Union. But certainly thinking from like a Union first perspective, that doesn't make an enormous amount of sense to me. And it's not like, it's also like the Union, because they did so well, they have kind of a weird draw. Like Club Tijuana and Querétaro in the first round are not going to be, my sense is that those are not big drivers. There would be some. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think the real question in these early months is like, how deep of a run can they make in CCL, and how do they balance, this? Like, they got a Saturday game against Inter Miami, and then they're like 72 hours later, they got to be in, Costa Rica or wherever Alianza is.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't, you know, I think they're Honduras, right? Are they Honduras? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think the thing that bothers me too, or not bothers me, because people ask me, they're like, well, how would you prioritize like 1 through 5, the league, or Supporter Shield, MLS Cup, Champions League, US Open Cup, and Leagues Cup or whatever. Well, Leagues Cup will be dead last, obviously. But I don't think that you can really put any of those in any kind of like order, because, you know, the attention that you pay to each one of them is kind of predicated on what happens in prior results of the other competition. That's a fancy way of me saying, like, remember in 2021, they had a tie and they had 2 losses in the league. They had 1 point out of 9 to start off because they're in the Champions League and they're playing Saprissa and they're playing Atlanta. So I don't want them to like get into a situation where it's like, oh, we made it to the semis of the Champions League again, but we didn't win jack shit. And then because of that, we fell behind in the league and now we're chasing on the supporter shield. So maybe it then adjusts their thinking. If they think the shield's out of the question, maybe they put more resources into the Open Cup or trying to win MLS Cup instead. You know, I just don't want them to play their way out of one competition because, you know, they're pushing for another competition and whatever. I mean, I think honestly, like realistically, I think the trophies that they can win this year are Supporter Shield or MLS Cup. I don't see them winning the Champions League. I mean, I don't mean to be negative about it, but let's like be practical here. They got to play much better teams in that competition. And I have like PTSD from the Open Cup. So I'm like out on the Open Cup.
Well, the Open Cup is so random. I mean, you don't get basically any benefit for being in good form or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and I think they have the depth of squad to make real challenges on all these tournaments. But I wrote a thing on PSP last week. I think that anything short of, maybe not quite anything short of MLS Cup is a failure, but I really think they've got a better opportunity than they're ever going to have to win MLS Cup this year. Lots of other teams taking a step back. They haven't lost anyone. Their squad's gotten stronger. Mm-hmm. They should be hungry. Like, I don't know. It's weird to have such high expectations, but I really think that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think in order for it to be a successful season, I don't think it's a hot take at all. I mean, because they went to the semis 2 years ago. They went to MLS Cup last year. They finished on a tie for the Supporter Shield. I mean, in order for them to take the next step, it's winning a trophy this year. And then I think if we look back at this era of Philadelphia Union soccer 5 to 10, 15 years from now, we can look back and say if they won the 2020 Shield and then the 2023 Shield or MLS Cup, then we call it a huge success. I mean, I don't want them to be – I don't want us to look back at this era of the Union and think of them like the 2007 to 2012 Phillies. You know, yeah, where you're like, oh, that was amazing, but you
or
know,
like the, you feel 01, like the 01 to 04 Eagles, you know, that,
yeah, but I think the difference there is that they didn't win shit, though. You know, I mean, with the Phillies, we were like, oh, we feel like we should have had another one from that team, you know, and I don't know, maybe we even feel that way about the Eagles when we look back when we see how Howie Roseman's tenure, you know, wraps up here in the next however many years, but yeah, I think they got to win a trophy and, that's kind of where my head's at, but a good start so far. I looked at the questions here. I think we answered most of what people were talking about. The only thing that we really didn't touch on, and we don't have to touch on this now, we can do this on another show, but we're talking about kind of like the light attacking options off the bench. And I think that's probably like one of the main things is like, hey, you know, figuring out which one of these young strikers is going to contribute this year, because Corey Burke was a big deal last year. And that's probably where they're weakest at this point, is probably attacking options off the bench. So we'll see. Final words, final thoughts, anything that you want to say before we get out of here?
No, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a short off season and the season kind of snuck up on me getting started. It takes a lot of energy on our end to get the wheels going and to get all of our riders, you know, back. But yeah, we're expecting another good season over at PSP. I mean, you and I have been doing this forever. My site's been doing this forever. And we're excited, obviously, because this is a season that I think has expectations unlike any other. So it should be fun to cover.
It's awesome. It should be a fun summer. I think this is probably the most anticipated Union plus Phillies, most anticipated combination of Union plus Phillies season.
Well, you know how you know that for the Union is that the season opener, it was like 25 degrees outside.
And that place was rocking, man.
It was full of rocking.
Yeah, it looked great, man. I just paused for a moment. I'm like, holy shit, is this the team that I covered for like 7 years? I can't believe it.
But as soon as you get out of the press box, they got good.
No, I know. We make that joke at like every other podcast. Once me and Zeitlin left, everybody and Eli left, you know, that they got good. So go figure. But it's a good problem to have. Now I can watch it at home in the basement on the 85-inch in high definition. So it's fine with me. Peter Andrews, Philly Soccer page. It's at PF Andrews on Twitter. It's always good to have you on the program, man. We appreciate it. And maybe I'll drag my ass down there a couple times this year. I went twice last year. I went once the year before. So we're on pace for maybe 3 or 4 times this year.
Yeah, it'd be great to see you. And thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time, whenever that will be.